Well, we'll get started. So are you recording now? Are we on? Okay. Hopefully you will show up. So for the record, this is a hearing for Lauren Gibson, who is contesting the decision by the Department Review Board back in January. And I do need to point out that we do have one change on the committee, that Susan Hansen was planning to be here, but because Susan's husband is in operation this afternoon, she requested that we use an alternate for the Lisa's here, if there's an issue with somebody, whatever. Otherwise, we'll just go ahead with that. The format that we're going to use tonight is that we'll allow Lauren to approximately 20 minutes or so. We don't have to hold exactly to that time, but we don't want to get too carried away. And we want to stick to this decision of the review board is to determine if process was handled correctly. We are not interested in the merits of, or the lack of merits of people, but was the process in making the decision for non-renewal held according to the procedures of our university. And so we will allow you, Lauren, to have the floor for about 20 minutes, and then we'll open it up for questions from the review board. And then following that, someone will speak for the DRB?
Yeah, I'll speak.
Okay. So then we'll give you the floor for a like amount of time, and then again have opportunity for the Appeals Commission to ask questions, to clarify things. And then after both of those have spoken, we'll give you closing remarks, 5 minutes or so for closing remarks for each group. So Lauren, floor is yours.
All right. First here, can't see the slide, obviously, through the audio. But first here, just kind of orient, to give a little preface here, just to clarify, you know, any statements that I make are public interest statements, this being a public university, colleges, public departments, students' interests are all covered here, as well as recognizing that I'm an expert, I am considered an expert in higher education administration and so forth. So just clarify, this is public interest for us. The other thing that I kind of want to point out here is part of the process within this this commission, the burden of proof is recognized as on me, where I have to show you a certain proof that these processes were contaminated and that kind of thing. However, the standard of proof is not clear. So that's kind of what I want to start with addressing here. The standard of proof. It's not listed, it's not mentioned within the procedures and bylaws. So I would hope, since this is a public interest thing, and that it goes well beyond this individual case, that you would consider that standard of proof just be more than likely standard of proof, more than likely that there was prejudice in this case, as opposed to not prejudice. So with that, we'll start with the causes for appeal, and I do plan to cover all three of these areas resulting because of the faculty bylaws were not followed. Available data bearing materially on my quality of my performance were not considered, and then as well as unfounded, arbitrary, or irrelevant assumptions were made of fact. All right, so starting first with accountability and the bylaws. Now, looking at this chart, with the bylaws followed, this is how the accountability should be set up. And as far as accountability, I'm talking about interpersonal accountability as well as work-related accountability. Now, in this case, bylaws are followed. You can see there that the result being that the dean is accountable to the department. Everyone is, but the dean is accountable to the department. The chair, should and is serving at the pleasure of the department. In our case, while they were being followed, everyone was accountable to the department, even the chair, except the online MS director, which is, that position is not accountable to the department, it's kind of a representative. So that's when the bylaws were followed. Bylaw procedural infraction number one. The dean removes the present chair without consulting the department. And as a result of this, of course, everyone is accountable to only the dean. There is no longer a chair sitting in between there, and of course, this should be temporary kind of situation. Isolated faculty dispute results in further interpersonal alienation of one of the members. And see there on the chart. The former chair is removed, becomes a department member, a DRB member as well. So you can see that the department consists of those DRB members. Next bylaw, procedural infraction. The dean alone selects a chair from outside the department with infraction bylaws, and the chancellor commends infractions 1 and 2. So the removal of the former chair and the appointment. Chancellor commends these actual violations. Bylaw procedural infraction 3, the dean refuses to authorize an external search for the chairperson, which the department has the right to do. As a result of these infractions and the chancellor commending these infractions, everyone is accountable to the dean and the external interim chair. No one is accountable to the department. There is no consequences stemming from the department for action. Staff members are no longer protected by the department chair. They're subject to the interim chair. Staff members no longer can remove their chair. That chair is appropriate. Furthermore, staff members rely on this external chair or continue. Alright, so in reaction, this department tries to protect staff by rectifying previous infractions. In this case, this department elects the appellant and me for chairperson consideration. So there I am. I am considered chair by the dean. Bylaw procedural infraction 5, dean fails to complete the internal selection process. As a result, the appellant is rejected by the dean. The grounds that it would not be fair to the appellant's service chair. Interim chair employs intimidation and threats to have the appellant cease bylaw procedure of chairperson selection. And interim chair begins campaigning disparaging the appellant's qualifications and performance. Next procedural infraction. Interim chair incurs accountability situation. He's not accountable to the department. Cannot be removed by the department, expresses the department's need and privilege to constitute itself as the DRB. The department bylaws has the right to do so. As a result, provides the alienated faculty member, the interim chair, online MS director, and the dean unfettered opportunity for bias, department level elimination, opposition, and ultimate retaliation towards all members. So not only staff is subjected to the will of the interim chair, all members. The current bylaw infraction number 6, fabricate evidence and arbitrary standards of performance to remove career obstacle and opposition to bylaw violation. See there, DRB consists of online interim chair. As a result, interim chair and online MS director have increased intimidation ability to continue the piece of the group. Online MS director maintains position until retirement. Interim chair maintains position and financial expense. And then the other possible bylaw infraction that came up with the chancellor's decision, far as concurring with the DRB. He notes some recommendations by the dean and the college review committee as evidence he referred to. In which case, the college RSD failed to supply me, the appellant, with a copy of these recommendations, not allowing for any college statement prior to the chancellor's decision. Now, this I'm not sure where this fits in as the DRB is currently being appealed, the DRB decision. However, the chancellor's decision did have.
I don't know either.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those things where again, if it comes to that. But just thought I would put this on the record. And of course, the result of this is material prejudice regarding the actual decision at this point. Provost and Chancellor have investment and preconceived conclusions because of that. All right, so beyond the bylaws, what material prejudice occurred? So arbitrary standards and ignored evidence. That's what I'm discussing here. And you see a quote here from Dr. Kaywood in the memorandum to the DRB, 24 January. He writes, Lauren is being held to a different standard than other probationary faculty members in this department. So DRB. So if you look first scholarly professional evaluation, you look at peer evaluations, and you can see here that the first year I'm rated normal, second year I'm rated above normal at both times, and that was third recent one below normal. So to look at this a little bit further, scholarly professional evaluations. See, in 2013 I worked quarter time on external grant project, and I completed an external grant proposal, continued stocking research collaboration, and attended a prior learning assessment conference. In 2013, then, that is one grant project worked on, grant application, and a conference attended, and I'm rated below normal. In comparison, external grant applications, the average is less than one, looking at the department, not everyone. External grant proposals, the average was less than one. Not everyone applied for external grants, and of course I did. Professional conferences, average less than two, and I attended one. So back in 2012, if you want to compare from last year to this year, grant projects one, I completed one grant application, attended zero conferences, and I was rated above normal. So in one year, I went from above normal to below normal. Leading more professional. University service evaluation. First evaluation normal, second year both, the first one was normal and then the second one was above normal, the second year. I went from above normal last year into this year I went below normal. So looking deeper into the university service, University Search Committee, College D&I Committee, College Budget Committee chaired two department searches, offered to chair two more, did serve on one of those. DRB member offered to chair the Department Curriculum Committee, and I'm one of two that have served that so far. Completed 60% of comprehensive criminal justice PLA tool, prior learning assessment tool. Sponsored a visiting Chinese scholar. And was in the faculty and a mentor. That is interesting. In comparison, not everyone in the department served as a committee chair. Not everyone served on the college committee yet. I served on one. University committee, not everyone, but I served on one. Served on two departments. And comparing years, in 2012, I served five committees above normal rating. 2013, there have been six committees which related to the low. Student teaching evaluation, and you can see on here, first year I was rated normal by students, and second above normal, and then the spring of my second year, outstanding, which for this year was dropped to be low. I think there was a drop from the last evaluation. Diving in deeper, student evaluation numbers, you can see there in the fall, everything totaling an average of 3.759. In 2013 fall, this recent semester, the average was 4.120. So in 2013, my peers rated this total 3.9 as the low normal. However, in 2012, all the way back to 1995, 3.9 was rated above normal. So this year, 3.9 was rated below. Specifically to teaching evaluations, peer evaluations, first year above normal, second fall normal, and second spring above normal, and then to this year rated low. And at this point, I'd like to point out that to be rated low by a fourth person DRB, three votes of low would have to exist, and no votes above below normal. There's almost unanimous as well. And then to point out further that in his memorandum, Dr. K. Wood also wrote, teaching effectiveness should have been no lower than average. So one of those members rated me at least a normal or above. Yet the final peer evaluation was indicated as low. So mathematically, very good.
Clarify something here. When you say average, there isn't an average on there. Is average to be equated with normal then?
I believe it is. And Dr. Kaywood is present.
Yes.
All right, so to explain the extreme drop in my rating, we'll first look at just the amount of activity that was involved. 70 plus advisees, taught 12 courses during the semesters, plus a winterroom and two summer pre-session courses. Supervised six internships, and the principal creator of the program-wide curriculum assessment. And that received a rating of low. In 2012, I had 70 plus advisees, 12 courses during the semesters, and taught a winterroom. By 7 in 2012, that activity was rated above. So there is actually more activity in 2013. The further evidence possibly used to get me that low was the peer evaluation, and I believe that is available. And so to look at this in a little more depth, it is a 13-item peer evaluation document which the peer fills out. And if the first part of it consists of 10 items, in which there's a grading scale of 1 to 5, 1 being not at all, and 5 being the highest score. And all of these, they're all indicated as 2, and even item 8. If I were a student, I would enjoy taking the class with low 1. It's graded with 1, the lowest 4. So this rating indicates that I, as an instructor, did not do anything well. Could be considered that I did not do anything well. And so to look at the further, diving in deep into this document, you see here as listed as the major strengths of the classroom sessions were. And three items were mentioned here, and to give effort. And the last one there, we see that the instructor did encourage students' questions, receive students' questions politely. Notice the tone is to suggest that it is possible. The evidence might indicate that there's a strength. There's no absolute statement here, but it is, in fact, here on the order of belief. And even in the third one, where this does not rely on perception, the term did is used to indicate that this is perhaps unsuspected. I think instead of the instructor encouraged student questions, the instructor did encourage student questions. So the tone of it is bent towards the negative. When we look into the weaknesses, you notice that every statement here, none of it is possible, suggested to be only possible or plausible. These are all definite conclusions. The instructor did not, the content was not, did not, and you can see throughout that there's no appear to be or instructor did not. So conclusions are absolute when it comes to negative. Also, however, the positive one. Strengths of the instructor are noted as it's possible. And then just diving into a few of the actual items, major weaknesses of the instructor did not make clear statement of the purpose of the lessons. This was the first slide of the lesson, which says lesson objectives, understand, define, and appreciate. Furthermore, if you look at the first two, the instructor did not make a clear statement of the purpose of the lessons. The instructor did not define the relationship of these lessons to previous lessons. These conclusions were made by the peer evaluator, despite the reviewer being 5 minutes late to the actual lesson. Yep, the conclusions are still made, but I was not done. And then last one we'll look at here specifically. Instructor vaguely defined new terms, concepts, and principles. So the evaluator found not just terms, not just concepts, not just principles, but the instructor actually failed to define terms, concepts, and principles. So. The statement itself suggests evaluator could try to actually differentiate between terms and concepts. And in summary, the material prejudice resulted because of all three of these areas. Affected by law resulted in material prejudice. Available data bearing materially on the quality of the performance was not considered, and unfounded arbitrary or relevant assumptions of fact. Arbitrary standards were applied.
That concludes it.
That
okay.
Concludes.
Didn't want to cut you short if you had something more to say. And so we'll open it up for questions from the subcommittee.
Do you post your lecture slides on D2L or? Do you use D2L on a regular basis in your courses?
Yes, I do. The lesson slides are actually posted before the lesson. So many of the students print them out ahead of time.
Did you have the lecture slides on the day the reviewer visited your class?
Yes, they were. All the slides were put up at the beginning of
on that particular day for that lecture?
Yeah, they were up.
Does the DRB have specific numbers that you have to reach with student evaluations to achieve a particular rating from your peers regarding student evaluation.
Yes, thank you.
And I'm thinking back to that slide where you were increasingly, where you were increasing from normal to above normal to outstanding to below normal. Were those taken, was that an arbitrary rating by your DRB, or was that, does that reflect the numbers you received on student evaluation?
This right there is the DRB student evaluation.
And is the DRB bound by what numbers you get on your actual student evaluation?
Yes, they have been.
If I maybe can refocus that. So our student evaluations are open-ended. They're not a Likert scale. And so we don't have a way of getting numbers, and it becomes really a subjective review by the DRB. I don't know, do your evaluations have a Likert scale where they can actually crunch out a number that says this was the average response on any question?
Yes.
So when you were giving us those numbers, these
are course averages for each one of the courses, and then the total spread would be the average.
Okay, so you do have a Likert scale type evaluation.
Yes.
That's what I wanted to know. Thanks. Okay.
I would like to go back to the previous slide.
Previous to that?
That table here. Now, did you take this table from the Form 17 that DRB keeps in your DRB file, or where did this table come from?
This came from the
DRB. DRB file.
Yes.
Okay, just as a comment for everybody here, when DRB completes this form, they are not supposed to look at the the student evaluations. They are supposed to complete this table without reference to student evaluations. And there is a separate box to put a check mark for the student evaluations after the peer evaluation is done. So this box is from peer evaluation box that is filled by DRB. I want to ask as a clarification.
Yeah, as a clarification, what's typically been, I've been on the DRB until this year.
So there are two boxes. One is the peer evaluation, the other one is
correct. The way I assume the DRB did it was they usually do their peer evaluation first, and then they bring out the actual student evaluation.
You've gotten letters before saying this is what we expect you to.
Yes, I have. Yeah, from the chancellor.
Yeah. Oh, no, I mean from the DRB.
So I think the process she's referring to was started a couple years ago where the met.
Yes.
Separate from the DRB, it's the tenured faculty of the department meeting and making a statement that you are on progress toward tenure or you're not on progress. Here are the areas we want you to work on. So it's a separate statement, separate from the DRB.
It comes from the department chair, usually.
And you receive those, and they've been positive?
Yes.
Did they offer in those letters that were a result of the discussion of the tenured faculty, were there specific items addressed that said, well, there's a weakness here, you ought to address this?
No, there wasn't any weaknesses recognized.
Did you say we expect this many publications,
no,
or we expect this kind of teaching? No.
The way, and I address this in kind of the document that I sent you. With criminal justice, justice, you have, you know, the community service, the scholarship, the main focus, the way I understood it and the way I've always been communicated, the way it's been communicated to me, is that it's criminal justice serving agencies is community service. It's almost by word. If you're doing criminal justice professionally, you're obviously doing community service as well. To me, the focus, the way I understood it, is continue to focus on actual providing expertise to agencies. That is our main focus.
In your job description, it says it's expected that the candidate remains professionally active in the CJ community. There's no mention of research.
Correct.
Peer visits. Did anybody in the department visit your classes, any of your classes, and any of the times you've been here more than the same person?
Yes.
So you had.
Definitely. And probably along those same lines. I mean, so there's kind of a focus on that teaching evaluation item here, as well as something on research. But there wasn't a mention in the previous visit that you need to improve teaching to be on track for.
Yeah, from the DRB.
How about the letter from the tenured faculty?
No.
That was a process started long after I got tenure. I don't even know what that letter might look at in a given department. Ours is very brief, but you know, you are on track.
Ours is, I bet it might have been
brief. And there's since before I got tenure.
Yeah.
For the entire time I've been
here.
Yeah.
It's been around a while, but it's not
at least a decade.
You typically,
and I
don't, and you typically probably don't remember because you were awesome. And so there was never anything
that's
negative to
why I didn't remember.
Usually there is a statement that says whether you are making satisfactory progress towards tenure or not. And that's what we are looking for.
And it doesn't come from the DRB.
It comes from the department chair.
The DRB does not make the decisions on tenure, the tenured faculty.
It comes from the tenured faculty vote, and the department chair summarizes the tenured faculty vote.
Right. Just so to clarify, I'm
I think we're just.
You just want it there.
We want to know what you've been told.
Yeah. So.
Are those letters still available? They should be there somewhere.
I believe I still have them, and Dr. K would probably still have those.
I did check in.
Mark, are you allowed to get them?
I don't. I could check the system legal, but I don't know why not. We will deliberate. We won't probably not have a decision tonight.
But it may be a good idea for you to scan them and send it to Mark in case you want to see it.
As far as my evaluation goes, I had a good indication that my evaluations were not going well right after I was elected. Yeah, I did. It's kind of a general one. I have a list of course or program goals that I asked them to get that opportunity to achieve those. But there's nothing of negative positive. as far as instruction goes.
Was there any indication or any recommendation given to you from the department chair, from the department, of things that you would need to do in order to do? Was there any possibility of something you could do?
Yes, the interim chair gave me a list of things that you would like to do.
And is that the letter?
That was the letter. And the...
That was the letter dated October, but sent November?
No. Yeah, it was October, but it was
the
beginning of November. Correct.
So putting that in a perspective, that is not a normal time of year when my department would be sending letters out to somebody in the third year. Why is that a normal timing as your group goes through the process?
Well, no, nothing's normal because we have an interim chair, a brand new chair.
Okay,
and
so...
Not nothing, but a lot of stuff.
So just trying to understand the timing of that letter, as I see the mark there for the third year, I'm assuming that's the January decisions. Are letters for a January decision normally written in October?
No.
So what precipitated a letter in October? And it may be normal in your department, it's just not normal in my department.
No, I believe the interim chair... probably just unfamiliar and wanted to give everybody, see everybody and get some feedback. I don't know if he's bothered with anyone else. I know that he did that for me. And the majority of his kind of goals for me were to reduce negative comments by students, which I did. It was negative comments. The entire fall semester.
So you're aware. Interim chair sent letters to all
probationers. I don't
know
anybody else, but he's here too.
Okay. The teaching load that you have is 150% of classes.
Right.
Which choice is that?
That's my choice. Six is. Five isn't my choice because it's kind of. So that's just to make sure the department is not going crazy. The sixth
you're
one.
You're trying to hire two people right now, right? So
yeah, we did hire two.
And they're already here?
No, they'll be here.
Right, so you're running too short.
Yeah, we're probably running too short.
Was there an overload pay when you took the 150% teaching
load?
Was there overload pay?
Correct.
For how many courses? Two courses,
two courses.
Overload.
Just going back to sort of this whole chair business, it's a comment you've made today, but it was several times in the written documents we got, that the chair serves at the pleasure of the department. What does that mean to you?
What does it mean that that the department, well, the department can hold the chair out of the board. That person does. That person.
As I read bylaws, a department can sort of elect a chair, but ultimately the phrasing is that the advice and consent of a dean is required.
Yep.
So.
Are you asking how that's a bylaw interaction?
Well, it's sort of a question of you're using that as an infraction that the procedure for the chair wasn't followed. But in terms of the department doing an election and coming up with who they prefer to be chair and then who actually gets appointed aren't necessarily the same thing. Not that that's a good
correct
situation, but it's okay.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. I mean, the way I would understand it is the dean in whatever college kind of probably has a rank order of who they would like. The department elects, and by that way, the department gets first choice. there is no alternative. So ultimately, the department might have to settle a little bit, the dean might have to settle a little bit. But that's the provision.
And there's no current search for that?
Correct.
Other questions? Taking advantage of it, like, fine. Thank you, Lauren. And so now we will ask the DRB, representative of the DRB, and that would be you.
May I just make one clarification? Dr. Fuller, who is the director of the program, has not reported to me since about July 2012. And so she, in July 2012, I wrote a memo and in which I transferred her reporting back to the chair. So that hasn't been the case since I got here.
Okay.
I mean, that diagram is
incorrect. The diagram is completely incorrect.
Oh. Okay.
So you're saying that she's responsible to the interim chair?
She was responsible to Dr. Kingwood as of July 2012 and has been reporting to the chair since July 2012.
That's good. Okay. Thanks for that note.
It's important.
I don't like doing this. I don't like competition. Anyways, so I'm the DRB FI chair this year. The CJ FI DRB met on 1/15/2014. CJ FI Crime Investigation. And before I even say that, we have to all remember that this is a procedural hearing. It's a procedural hearing. Did we go through the right procedures to get the answer? Okay. Once again, the CJFIDRB, we met on 1/15/2014. At that point, we had a split vote against retention with Dr. Gibson, a split vote on merit. We had a unanimous vote against promotion. And we had a unanimous vote against inequity. Then we had the DRB reconsideration. We sent Dr. Gibson an email and said, you have a right to reconsider. And he decided that we should meet as a committee, but he wasn't going to be there. He wasn't going to be there to present any evidence. He wasn't going to be there to present any verbal information. He wasn't going to send anybody in. And so the DRB FI can only work with the materials that we have. And that was very little. Very little. As a third year faculty member, according to the DRB FI committee, he did not get to the level where he should be in the CDU department at the third level. So the reconsideration committee, once again, came up with the same result. Split vote on retention. Split vote on merit. Unanimous vote against promotion. Unanimous vote against inequity. Once again, we received no material. Nothing. Via email, via person, nothing. So all the discussion today that we had today, we received no argumentation. Look at this objectively, we had nothing. We followed the procedure. Okay. So in conclusion, for the record, all DRB, CRST, URSTPC, and all the bylaws, all the guidelines, all the procedures, all the deadlines were met according to UW Platteville policy. And in the notebook that belongs to Dr. Gibson are memos and emails of communication of these results. So the procedures were met correctly, we met them successfully,
The evidence can be argued here, but once again, Dr. Gibson had an opportunity at reconsideration to present those things, and he did not. Thank you.
We can.
Oh, okay.
And if there's anybody else that would. So you're the sole speaker for the DRB, or do you want?
Well, whoever wants to speak, Eric Patel's on the committee, Sabina Burton's on the committee.
So we'll open up for discussion, and then if we have other people from either side that want to go ahead.
I just want to ask, what is the cutoff for normal, above normal, for teaching? The student evals. Okay. We have teaching evals. We have a computerized series of questions, 1 to 10, that are answered, computed, and there's a rank. I don't know the rank, I don't have it offhand, but there's a rank that basically says if you meet this number, you get this ranking. That's 70%. 30% are comments. Okay, I don't want to get into this meeting because I think we have some personnel issues, but the comments need to be looked at. The comments are like I said, there's some fine lines between personnel issues and DRB review. Okay, but I want to make it clear to the committee there's a 30% comment. And then 7% computerized numbers. If you want to review those, we have them on file.
And so with that 70% that is from the Likert scale, everybody in the department knows what this cut standard cutoffs are for the
different. Exactly. Yeah.
In the kind of battle.
Yes.
Instead of the DRB cutoff.
Right.
So there is a subjective component, like Julia mentioned about math. In addition to the numeric component. And as I was listening to Paula talk about this student evaluation, yes, we do look at the files without looking at student evaluation. But I don't see that we can do anything with student evaluation. The DRB can't tell us how the students evaluate us, from what I understand. What I'm thinking. We actually have to, that is based on student evaluation.
Correct.
Like I said, there's the common part is somewhat not subjective, but I think experts on the DRB, I hope there's some faith in the system where we can judge accordingly. But yes, there's a comment section and there's a computerized section. And like I said, there's a percentage giving. And the comments are not just okay. There's some willingness that need to take.
So it is possible that with favorable numeric evaluations, that there could be some overriding comments that would persuade the DRB to provide a low rating.
Absolutely.
You know, the 22 years that I've been on that DRB within the department, this is the first time I ever heard of the 30-70 issue. So we've always looked at
the 30-70 is in the bylaw.
Yeah, and it's never been discussed on that. And if you go back through the years, student teaching evaluation has always been based on that mean score. And with that chart you have in front of you. That's how that was. So it's always that way, and that's how it's more.
Thanks, Tom.
Thank you.
The question would be, does it appear in the, do you have to have proceedings that are submitted each year to the DRB has to come up with proceedings that the faculty agree on, and it is in there?
Yes.
Yeah. It's also in there that the department, that the DRB is a committee of the whole. And it's always been a committee of the whole. This is the first year where tenure track faculty were not allowed to serve on the DRB. That's one of the issues I raised before, was that this, we're changing something in midstream. That it, previously, every person on the department served on the DRB. Now, the tenure votes, after the Michael Anderson decision, then it became the tenure faculty, you know, that's where he wrote the letters for the tenure vote. And so we always had basically, you know, you had the DRB aspect of it, and then you had the tenure track aspect of it, or the tenure faculty aspect of it.
Just to clarify your opening statement, In past years, the DRB was a committee of the whole.
Correct.
But you said this year...
It was not.
People were excluded?
Correct.
And who was excluded?
All the tenured track faculty.
Tenured track.
So it was...
Non-tenured.
Right.
Correct.
Okay. Those who had not yet received tenure were...
Correct. Right. This year. Previous years, they always served on the DRB.
So, Cheryl, it's interesting that you have a committee that's made up of four people so that you could have a split vote. Is that because there were only four people tenured?
Well, we have to issue, once again, we've had some major concerns in our department. There's been a changeover from the chair. We've had some things that I can't get into.
Right, I don't want to.
Okay. Well, but the reality is, when we made the DRB, of everybody, we had people that didn't want to be on the DRB because they felt pressured to vote in favor of promotion. The thing that's going through the Faculty Senate right now, the thing that's the issue going through the Faculty Senate is that by putting non-tenured people on these committees, they feel they have to vote in favor for promotion. These people are making decisions on their superior, not superior, but their higher ranking folks.
But is it possible to have three or five people on here so you don't end up with a tie vote?
We could, but we did have a, and right now we're looking at that, and we have the new URSGPC policies going into effect, so we're looking at this. But you have to remember, we have majority of people are either, we have four tenured people, and then we have a lot of assistant professors. I mean, we have, it's such an inequity of rank that, and by talking to some of the assistant professors, they did not want to be on the CRC, so there's even a pressure to be on there. So at this point, the change in the department, the need to be restructured in our department. One of the biggest problems in our department was that we're having lecturers and assistant professors making decisions that were out of policies and procedures of UWP, URSPC. And so we're trying to put that back into sync. We're working on it as part of the change process, and we're hoping it's better next year.
Who made the decision to exclude the non-tenured faculty?
We decided a senior faculty.
No.
The chair and senior faculty.
No. No.
I was part of that.
There was no vote on that. There was no vote of the department. It was a decision made without feedback from it. We tried to argue it, and it was overruled.
I just want to know one thing here. The decisions about tenure belong to the tenured faculty. So whether they were untenured or not on that committee doesn't make any difference. We have a four-member tenure body, and that's the body whose decision we're here to discuss today. And people can spend some time talking about some other things that are irrelevant to that.
But when it comes, tenure decision.
Well, it's a retention decision. So it's still ultimately the same thing.
Well, but it's... At one point, we're saying, well, we absolutely have to follow. We've got just differences of opinion about the 70-30 rule. And we've got Tom saying in the past he's been unaware of it. We've got Cheryl saying, oh, but it's in our bylaws. We have to follow it. But now we're hearing there's a part of the bylaws we're not following. Just unilaterally, we're not going to follow it. So that becomes troublesome if you're following some of your bylaws and not all of your bylaws. And so I think that's the issue of a change in practice. If somebody, and I'm not yet clear who made that final decision about excluding non-tenured faculty from the DRB, whether they were given the option of serving if they wanted to.
Let
me finish, please. Because in our department, we have a split that we need at least three tenured, but we allow some non-tenure. And we actually have non-tenure who want to be on it just to be familiar with the process. And so I guess the question I'm asking is, how did that decision come about that said non-tenured would not serve?
Well, you can attribute it to me. In an era where we have all kinds of power differentials and conflicts of interest, I have to admit I was dumbfounded when I was asked to serve on the DRB several years ago in criminal justice because there were not enough tenured faculty members to meet that minimum number, which I believe was three at the time. And I sat down in the DRB with a lot of other people who were not tenured, and my first thought was, what are they doing? How on earth does it make any sense at all that you would have people evaluating not only people at higher ranks than the people on whom they depend for a tenure, but also evaluating each other, given that since they haven't earned either tenure or promotion, they're presumed not to have the knowledge necessary to be able to make that decision. It never made the least bit of sense to me, and I voiced that concern at the time. I don't know how anyone here cannot see the power differentials and conflicts of interest that emanate from that kind of system. And in fact, when you look at the differences in the ratings, I think there's some apparent evidence of exactly that.
But I guess my perspective is it's not our position to agree or disagree. It's what's in the bylaws.
What is in the bylaws? I mean, where do you read that in the bylaws that we have to have tenure and...
I don't know.
I didn't read the bylaws where we say you can't have all tenured faculty.
Everybody
should be included. That's not in the bylaws. That's a Tom decision to everybody in the department.
Just to clarify for the record, the way it's written is the department may constitute itself as the DRB. Yeah, the department may constitute itself as the DRB.
But I would argue that
it's automatically done that way. Not that you can't do it that way. It's the department's decision to do that.
My question is how were these changes? So that the DRB was going to be comprised of only tenure faculty, and the fact that you were reinstituting the 30%, 70% evaluation. How was that disseminated to your faculty?
To the DRB guidelines.
You didn't give them any other notice that you were changing how they were going to be evaluated, how they had been evaluated, or assumed they would be evaluated in the past.
They voted on that from last year, right?
They understood that, but as I'm listening, he's saying that it wasn't taken into account the 70% in particular, and that there was a decision that typically you had non-tenured faculty on your DRB, now you're not going to have any. Is that somehow disseminated to your department so they were made aware of this is how DRB is going to happen?
The only thing was that the guidelines that 30-70.
And the 30-70, what I hear is here being said is if there's perhaps a difference between what's written and what's assumed to be practice.
Yeah, probably.
Okay.
Yeah.
It says in that memo that this is the DRB procedure, and this is actually a memo that went to the CRSPC.
Right.
Was this voted in the department meeting and approved by all the faculty or not?
That, you have to keep in mind that was from a year ago. You have to get that approved a year ago.
That's right. Okay, that's right. It's from Joe Lomax.
And I'm assuming, because it's Joe Lomax down there and Tom, I'm assuming you guys voted on that. That was on the CRS people last year. I think
the guidelines were approved. It always goes, about October-ish or so.
Yeah.
We go through the guidelines. No changes were made.
Yeah.
They just, this is the guidelines that the DRB had sent out to everyone that had anything to say. We make changes, and so sort of go, this DRB guideline has been pretty much the same for a number of years.
What I'm trying to get is that if it had been voted by the department, that's the time everybody in the department knew about it. That's what I want to confirm.
Is it correct on that?
It was only at the department meeting the decision was made. There was we're supposed to be following the same guidelines, the 2013-2014 guidelines, and this was changed midstream.
I have a follow-up question for Cheryl. Is this your first year on the DRB, or is this you are continuing on the DRB second year?
This is my first year. Well, I've been here 16 years. Okay, so I've been DRB chair for probably.
Out of those 3 years, first year, second year, third year.
Oh no, I was on the CRST for 4 years. I was on the CRST.
Okay. Are you familiar with any tenure? The satisfactory progress towards tenure from the department chair regarding this candidate?
We have no tenure progress letters going out on tenure.
Usually,
are they required? Yes, they are required. They never went through.
Usually it's the decision of the tenured faculty in the department, and it is summarized by the department chair
Correct.
Sometime in December or January time period.
Yeah.
do that under our form.
So during those first, second, and third year on that particular chart, as far as you know, there is no letter that talked about.
There's a third year letter. There's a third year letter from the interim chair.
Okay. Not from the interim chair, from the.
But as far as I know, there are no letters from the first or second year.
We have a tenured letter for this. I think we just have one tenured letter in there, right? Where the faculty circle, I agree or disagree on the tenure project. I think he has one letter from this year.
Is it possible for either the candidate or for the department to send a copy of whatever letter you have regarding progress towards tenure to Mark?
That we can. I think it's just, I'm only familiar with, I know there's only one in Dr. Gibson's file. He has another one, he didn't put it in there. And I wouldn't have the other ones because I wasn't on the DRB or I wasn't given privilege to be in that decision making for the last 4 years.
Except that as I understand it, in the past the DRB consisted of the department as a whole.
But she's on a CRST, so she couldn't have served on the DRB.
Oh, that's true.
Just tell the tenured members.
Those 4 years that he was here under the CRST.
So when we say the department as a whole, we really mean department as a whole, excluding those.
Excluding the CRC.
CRC. Okay.
It's still be in the tenured faculty, even though you're on the CRC.
She has to vote as the tenured faculty in the meeting.
That's a totally separate thing.
Right.
And those letters are right.
Your dean made a point that the DRB chair reports to the department chair and wanted us to know. If that was the case, why is that important?
Okay, one more time, sir.
I said your dean made a point to say that the structure that Lauren had put up there was wrong, that the DRB chair has for the more than 1 year reports to the department chair as opposed to the dean. Okay.
Well, like I said, there's some personnel issues in the past that I can't move forward at this meeting, but that was in, I was reporting to the dean for a few years, for the department relations, and then I went back to
the dean. If I could just clarify, it's not the DRB chair reporting to the dean.
And the representation that Dr. Gibson is making actually is very clear. He is arguing that I protect Dr. Fuller because she reports to me. She does not report to me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I wondered why.
And has
I didn't
not
make
reported
that connection
for almost 2 years.
Yeah. I appreciate that.
And so I think, you know, you need to take that into account when interpreting these slides.
Okay. But you say you're not to be intimidated by that line of command.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Now
believe
I
me, yeah. She doesn't persuade me in any way.
But she has reported, Dr. Fuller has reported to Dr. Kaywood from July 2012 until July 2013, and now reports
right
to Dr.
Yeah.
DeLay.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
I'm not sure, Cheryl, if you can answer this, but I'm going to give it a shot. So I'm going back to student evaluation, 70%, 30%. So the 70% is pretty straightforward in terms of there's a score that's established for the quantitative evaluation.
Correct.
How is the 30% determined? Boring, or how do you, is it each DRB member gets to read it and says, okay, I'm just going to say 30% of my decision is based in here, but 70% is based on.
Correct.
That's how
yes, exactly. Moving over a little bit, exactly. I'll do the best we can on majority vote, and I go to Tom, is that your favorite? Yeah. Eric is your favorite? Yeah. I circle it on the sheet. There is some gray area. The tenured faculty who've been in the department and been to the university for many years. There's a little bit of gray area in that switching, but like I said, when you look at the comments, they're very concerning. So I cannot go from a 3.79 to some major common concerns, which take us into personnel issues, and then give him a normal.
How many comments?
Excuse me?
How many comments that you can do that make up that 30%?
We're talking about a couple students.
We're talking about,
I can probably give you will disperse them for a year, probably.
I'm looking for that same answer. If we take one or two students who are totally disgruntled,
that may not say much to me.
No,
not one or two disgruntled.
I was looking for, is there really a preponderance of students that are dissatisfied?
It has just as many that were very favorable as well. I don't think it did number count. Well, here we have so many, a lot of greatest person off on the face of the earth.
With the Likert scale. And I mean, there are some incredibly outstanding teachers here, and that the department average seemed to me to be somewhere in the area of 4.5. That was the average. That was the average. Now, this is from memory, so I'm more than happy to be gainsay about that. But, so that's sort of, the bar is pretty high in terms of that numeric average. The second piece is, and again, I cannot get into the details of this, but I will say that Dr. Gibson was counseled by me in fall of 2012 about classroom behavior.
So I can follow up on the bar is high. As I understood earlier, it's not a shifting bar, that your guidelines actually have specific cutoff numbers for the 70%. It's not that we can change the bar because we've got outstanding faculty, but the numbers are fixed. And so you might have an entire department ranking high, but the numbers have been predetermined where the cutoffs are. But they are predetermined. So everybody in the department knows what that cutoff is.
You have to take into consideration that a shift in administration for certain reasons.
Okay, so was this bar of the 4.5 a unique anomaly then? Is that what you're saying? Implying, or has this 4.5 been consistent over the course of the
It's been consistent, so the process is fair. I mean, the process, we're with the process, okay? But the ranking.
Okay, so you have semesters prior to this, years prior to this, where you still have a 4.5. This gentleman here has been getting 3.9, but you've been rating him above normal, giving him no indication that he had, there was concern.
So you have to remember different administration, some of the folks are in different parts of the university. I personally wasn't involved in the last 4 years, mostly in the period.
When the outstanding rating was given in that particular form, was the DRB composed of the entire department, and then the lower rating came from the time when only four people were on the DRB?
I would say absolutely, yes. I think all the tenure, right? Everybody was on the DRB now? Yes. Everybody in the department on the DRB, everybody.
When the outstanding was given?
When the outstanding was given.
And then the next rating was when the four people were on
the Absolutely. Going to the ranks and policy, we stuck with.
Okay, that's fine. That's okay. What I thought from that department to verify.
Thank
you. Can I pause? Opportunity. Determine probably have answered most of the questions we want answered. So at this point, Lauren, we'll turn the floor over to you. Unless did anybody else
unless speak? Dr. Kaywood wants to say something, he has been able to provide some information. So does Dr. Kaywood want to say something?
All faculty, either tenure track, tenured or academic staff, go through the same evaluation process. The questionnaire is given to all the students in our department. We've got some academic staff people that, you know, they get 5-0s all the time on that. But that's not here. When we're talking about here, we're talking about the tenure track or tenure faculty. And we use the same process. That sheet, I think, since 1995 has been in use. In our department, and it's always based upon here's what the numeric number is, that's what score they got.
Anything else you want to add, Tom?
Unless you have specific questions about it.
Okay. Thank you. And so we'll give Lauren an opportunity to summarize.
Regarding the bylaws and accountability, whether or not it's the dean or the interim chair, the human pressure. The external chair is a competitor, wants to be in our department, has expressed wanting to be a permanent member of the department. When the external chair is allowed to discuss negatively with the DRB in his position of power to possibly disparage retaining a member in order to obtain a permanent position in the future is completely prejudiced to all probation. External chair wants to become a permanent member, influencing who is retained and who is not. Now, as far as peer evaluations, you will see, when you look through those, you will see 20 negative comments in the spring. You will also see a letter from the external interim chair that says that I expect that these comments will go down. I received this in November. My immediate response was, I already read the comments. I already know there's whatever number. I will address these. And I did this prior to the semester even starting, figuring out how I'm going to address these. By the external chair pointing out that there's negative comments. I've already implemented new policies, new procedures, new pedagogy in my course to address them. And you will see at the end of the semester, there is perhaps one or two negative comments, and they are nothing. Did I address negative comments? Yes. Did I do it prior to even being evaluated by the external chair? Yes. Where did the negative come from? The negative is purely on the focus of last spring. When you see this fall, there are no negative comments. Am I progressing towards tenure? Does that indicate I'm progressing towards tenure? I would argue yes. If I can remove this. All the negative comments in one semester. Was that taken into account that I went from 20 or 30 or 50 or whatever they want to say was negative to almost none the next semester? Is that an indicator that I am progressing? Yes, it is. It should be. And then as far as the DRB not being constituted, the department not being constituted as a DRB, I will tell you why. Department should be on the DRB. When you have three tenured faculty or four tenured faculty, you are leaving retention up to two individuals, two people. There is no protection for probationary faculty for being taken advantage of in this situation. The department chair is not voted on by the department. The department does not get rid of the chair, which leaves probationary faculty be at the mercy of an external chair and tenured faculty. And in this case, all it takes is two. That is why it has prejudice to not have the entire department constituted as a DRB. It leaves too much power to people who are not accountable to the department. This year, more than ever, required to see the entire department. It was more important than it ever had been before. And it was squashed by, of course, the external chair. The external chair came in that this will not take place. It will not be probationary faculty in the area.
There was a vote for chair in October?
Correct.
And you won that? And that was the entire department?
Actually, he did not win it. There were three people who voted for him, three people who abstained, and two who voted for somebody else.
Did I win it?
I would probably, in our estimation, assuming that two people who did not vote in this election are on the DRB.
Simply an assumption.
It is simply an assumption.
Does that conclude your commentary, or do you want to add anything yet?
What haven't they covered?
Just wondering if you are satisfied with your impression you're leaving on that.
Oh, yeah. Basically, I would just encourage you to just preponderance of the evidence. Don't go beyond a reasonable doubt in your mind. The department is kind of counting on this decision. And quite frankly, but the department does. So preponderance of the evidence, more than likely that there's material prejudice that weighs this decision. I strongly encourage that. And then again, to read through clear bias language, the bias approach, unfounded conclusions that you see within the documents written by DRB. Evaluations and about their recommendations should clarify for you that there is a bias in the conclusion across the board.
Thank you. And Cheryl, do you want to make some summary statements for the DRB?
Yes, just once again, this is a sad situation. I don't think I'm here. I'm here, and we met the requirements, went through the procedures, like I said, being warned, at opportunity to come to the committee and convince us to take anything, an email, a representative, we refused not to. We said, let the DRB hash it out, quote unquote. And so it left no other evidence to evaluate, to change our opinion, to get a vote in the department, or the DRB, everybody voted the same vote, and so here we are. But we followed procedures accordingly to, once again, any DRB regulations, guidelines, URSTPC, CRSTC, and any bylaws were in good faith followed.
Thanks for reminding me. That's the other thing. As far as me not coming to the reconsideration hearing, I would probably ask Dr. Kaywood to address this a little bit, but it was a split vote. I have Dr. Kaywood, Professor Dutel knew the evidence. They could see the folder. They argued my case for me. There's no reason regarding my folder, which should have been the only source of evidence. Now, the last thing that I would like to address, since you just brought up, I'd like this on the record. I'm quoting here, it's a personnel issue. We are making negative ratings because of personnel issues. We cannot tell you the details. We can't tell you who said it. We can't tell you what they said, but it's negative. There's no way to make a counterstatement to that. How do we know that these are appropriate considerations? Is this due to religion, sexual orientation? What is this to deal with? Now, when you read through the comments, and you were asked to read through those comments in their negative, their personnel issues, and their poor comments, what are those comments? What is the personnel issue? That is disturbing. And you have comments that say, I have some concerns. We're getting rid of this person because we have concerns about something that we can't tell you about. This should not be in any way considered by the DRB, the dean, the chancellor. Not evidence. It's not evidence. It should not be considered evidence. But there's personnel issues I can't discuss.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Were you too?
Okay. So we'll need to deliberate.
I just want to rephrase what Lauren said. It's your contention that you didn't appeal to the DRB because your case had been presented by two people on the DRB, and that's the reason why you didn't formally appeal.
Yes,
to the DRB. That's in summary what you said.
Absolutely, I had two votes. Two of those members know exactly all the scholarship work I did. They've seen me teach. They've seen my peer evaluation.
But my statement is right. You didn't reappeal because of that.
Yes.
And then coming to your scholarship activity, I have only one question. Was any of that funded research or sponsored research?
Yes, the prior member assessment research.
By?
By the system.
By the system, UW system. That's it.
Okay.
Sorry.
I'm going to pull the plug on this already. So that concludes our hearing, and the subcommittee will deliberate. We may not do it right this evening or get an answer this evening. We will try to get it in a reasonable amount of time. And we will go based on what we've heard up to this point, encourage people to discontinue their attempt to persuade us in any way. And we will get our results back to people, the interested parties,